Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and my guest today, John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. He specializes in evaluating older structures, and he'll walk us through tightening your home and dealing with mice or ice dams or air leaks or a whole lot more. Questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And John, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
What do mice and high heating bills and ice dams have in common? You've been dealing with those things.
I certainly have, including my old farmhouse where I do get a mouse every fall. But they all have to do with air leaks, either air coming in or air going out. What we've found on mice is that if your ring joists leak really badly, the mice feel that little breath of warm air outside, and they know there's a hole someplace. And I found most of them, but I catch two mice every fall in my house. We've been getting a lot of calls from people about excess moisture in their attic. They walk up in the attic, and either the whole underside of the sheathing is covered with moisture. The most common thing is they go up and they see that the nails all have frost on them. But of course, the nails transfer the heat out quickly, so they're nice and cold. So usually the first thing that frosts up in your house is the nails. I just got done with one of our listeners, Bernard, saying hello to you, who had some attic issues. And with Bernard's attic issues, I thought this would be a good thing to talk about.
Yeah. So what's going on? What causes it?
What we have is, in the attic issues, is we have air moving upward. Now, the newer homes, since about 1978, is we've required a vapor barrier in the houses. Now, usually that is a piece of plastic. And the vapor barrier helps because the vapor barrier can act as an air barrier. But we still have places like where the framed walls of the second floor bedrooms go through the ceiling where air can go in through your electrical outlets up through that wall and up into the attic. So unless we really have a complete air seal, which is what we're trying to put into new houses and commercial buildings, we always have some air going into the attic. And if you think in the winter, your house is sort of like a hot air balloon. The warm air is trying to rise. Well, rise is up into the attic, and that warm air is going to carry that moisture from inside your house. Once it gets up in the attic, and we hit the temperature at which it is going to condense out or freeze out, we can end up with a lot of moisture in the attic. And, of course, we've seen houses with oriented strand board or plywood roof sheathing where it has gotten so wet over such a period of time that the wood has become moldy and the wood has even deteriorated. So we've had houses where they've had to rip all of the sheathing off the roof of the house because the shingles wouldn't stick into the deteriorated sheathing anymore. So it can be really serious.
Boy. Well, people don't go up in their attics very, a lot of times, depending, if you have an attic even, is it a crawl space up there? You may not pay much attention to that over time.
That's a good point, Larry. And if you're going to check your house for moisture, a day like today is just perfect. We have about the best conditions possible, don't we? It's 10 degrees outside. Your house is at 70. Your house is nice and moist and warm, and your attic is nice and dry and cold. So if you pop your head up in that attic on a day like this, and everything looks pretty good, you know you're in good shape. If things look pretty bad, then we need to start talking about how we are going to tighten up that house.
And what are the commonest ways or the best ways to approach that?
It's going to depend a little bit upon the age of the house. The very best way on older houses that have no vapor barrier, no air barrier at all, that really have moisture problems, is what we've been suggesting to people is they actually vacuum all the old insulation out of their attic.
Oh.
And that's actually $800 to $1,000.
Yeah.
People come in with this giant vacuum cleaner truck, and they suck everything out, or if you have bats, you can roll it up. And that gets rid of some interesting things that may have been deposited by birds or animals or bats or whatever. And then using the modern two-part foams, if we spray an inch or two, I prefer 2 inches of foam, over the entire attic floor, That gives us, number one, a vapor barrier, number two, an air barrier, and number three, it gives us about R12 of thermal barrier. So these new sprays are great because they're giving you a 3-in-1. At that point, you have really separated your attic from the rest of your house, and you're not going to have much air exchange.
Joan in Waukesha has a question. She may have had a lot of her question answered, but let's go there. Joan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Okay, I don't have an old house. I live in a condo. It's a two-story townhouse style built in 2000. So I'm assuming it was built to code. We had to go up in the attic about 2 weeks ago, and when we put the trap door aside and then put it back, it was soaking wet. So my husband bought one of those indoor-outdoor type of temperature-humidity sensors and put that up in the attic last weekend and has just been watching it. So what would be the outdoor temperature is the attic. And then we have one for the inside. Our indoor humidity is 28%. Our attic humidity is 91%.
Whoa.
And there, it's wet. You put your hand down on the insulation, it's wet. I called my management company for the condo this morning and then heard the promo for your show. It was cool. Oh, my gosh, I have to call. So I'm assuming they will be most up to date. But what would be your suggestions as to what we need to do?
Well, I think the first thing we'll do, Joan, is we're going to think of a little bit of a checklist. Now, you've got moisture getting into the attic, and you shouldn't be getting that much moisture in a building that was built in 2000, because since 1978,
right,
we've had building codes in Wisconsin, and the vapor barrier in your house should be stopping the diffusion, but it also should be stopping a lot of the air leaks. Now,
it's hard to imagine there's a vapor barrier there at 90%.
There certainly should be. And what you can do to see if there's a vapor barrier is just take your hand and scrape away some of the insulation. If you
find, well, we have. There's a sheet of plastic down there.
Okay, good. So you verify that you have a vapor barrier. Now, unfortunately, with vapor barriers, they've got holes all over them. So we end up, even on new houses, with some air getting into the attic. Now, if the attic is well vented, that isn't a real big problem. What we want for attic venting is we want upper venting, because the air that comes up out of your house is warm. The warm air likes to rise, so that warm air in the attic, or as the attic warms from radiant loss from the house, that warm air wants to rise and go out. So if you have upper roof vents that are working, and that's one thing you should check. Now, there's two very common types of roof vents. One is the ridge vent, which is at the ridge. And we've seen a lot of buildings where they put a ridge vent under the shingles and they never cut away the sheathing, so they don't work. So with a flashlight, if you have a ridge vent, and from looking at the ground, you should be able to see if you've got sort of an irregularity in the shingles at the top of the roof. It looks like a 1-inch shadow line. Then you have a ridge vent. So then check in the attic. Take a flashlight. Is the sheathing cut away? Can air go out there? If you don't have a ridge vent, you may have what are called pot or turtle vents. And these are little about 1 foot or 15-inch square metal. They sort of look like an upside-down cake pan.
Yep.
And those also are used to get air out of the attic. So you want to make sure air is going out. But we have to have air coming into the attic as well, and that's where you need soffit venting. Now, on the outside of your building, you're out of 2000 building, you're probably going to either see vinyl or you're going to see a metal layer of material under the overhang. That's a soffit, is the overhang. Now, from the outside, you can see whether it looks like it's vented or not. But, of course, in the attic, is it really vented? If it is vented, you should be able to see daylight down through the insulation dams. Now, if they did not put insulation dams in the attic, it's possible that your insulation is over on top of the soffit and is blocking the airflow. The insulation dams are going to be cardboard or styrofoam. They're going to be like flattened U's, and they're going to be pushed down between the rafters or the truss to let air come up past the insulation. The other thing we see is a lot of buildings where they will not have enough of these insulation dams. They'll maybe have two or three on a side. They really should be between every truss and every rafter. So check for roof vent. Is it open? Check for soffit vent. Is it open? Check for insulation dams or proper vents. See if they're open. If they are, then you should have good airflow. It sounds like if you're at 91% humidity, and of course we can get mold, we know at 70%, that we have too much humidity up there.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And is it you and your partner?
Yes. So, yeah, it's just the two of us, no kids, you know. So it's just normal cooking and, you know.
A couple showers a day and,
Right.
Yeah.
And
okay.
28% inside the condo itself is actually fairly low for Wisconsin in the winter. We're usually in the 35 to 45% range. So you certainly are not over-humidified in your living space. Mm-hmm. So it seems I'm going to, from your description, Joan, I'm going to suspect that we have a venting issue. The nice thing about venting issues are usually pretty easy to, they're pretty
fix,
easy to clear up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I had one in a house, well, about three houses ago, and really it didn't cost all that much to put in, vents into the roof, to be perfectly honest.
It
worked great.
That's right.
After the fact. Thanks, Joan. You've got a few things to look for there. Appreciate it very much. John Freiberger, our guest from Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. Great to have him along. And if you have a question for him, join in. We've got open lines. Get you on really quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Chris on Facebook posted something. She's having her 100-year-old knob and tube wiring replaced, which has caused many holes in the attic floor. Someone suggested that instead of patching the holes, she should add a floor of insulation with a vapor barrier, then a new floor on top of that. She should then take down the batting insulation from the roof rafters. Do you think that's a good idea?
It sounds like we're headed in the right direction there. If they're taking out the knob and tube, they may have removed all the insulation already. It certainly makes it a lot easier and cheaper for the electrician to rewire a house if you get rid of that old grungy insulation up there. So I don't know how far Chris is along since this is an email. But as I said earlier, the ideal would be to go ahead and take all the insulation out, get that wiring done, and then put down the spray foam insulation as our air and vapor barrier. The addition of a plastic sheeting over the top of rafters, or joists rather, the floor joists of the attic, always worries me a little bit in case we get condensation on the underside of that because we're going to have that dead air space. I suppose somebody could try to wrap that very carefully up over each joist across the ceiling, etc., but that's really hard to do that well. So I would suggest that the spray foam would be the way to really start.
Mary Beth emailed us. It says that when her toilet and floor in her bathroom were replaced, they discovered ants, and they were sprayed, the ants. The experts who did this suspected the ants were eating the underside of the floor by the toilet as that flooring was wet. Will they now travel elsewhere in the house, or now that this area has been fixed, will it be okay?
Well, I'm not Phil Pelletieri, but I can tell you what
I've heard Phil talk about this many a time.
I have, too, and when we do home inspections, we occasionally see ants. We do have some ants, including carpenter ants, that really like wet wood because they can grow fungus on wet wood. Generally, what we find with carpenter ants, but not always, is that they really need moisture. But I have found carpenter ants in brand new houses basically cleaning up the sawdust. So what we always suggest as home inspectors, Mary Beth, is actually to have a pest person come in and inspect your house. It's not that expensive to do, and then you really have some peace of mind because we're getting a little bit beyond what a common home inspector is really capable of doing. But you're probably, if this is a second floor bathroom, I'd be a little bit more concerned than if it were a first floor bathroom. First floor, they may have been popping in through the ring joists and are now gone, but let's suggest a pest inspection to give you some peace of mind.
Especially if it was on the second floor, for sure. And I mean, if it's all dry wood, you're probably okay. But if there's wet wood somewhere else you don't know about, there for sure ants are probably going to try and find it.
That is correct. And we have found some ant nests that were absolutely astonishing. Masses of ants the size of a basketball.
Oh, boy. Well, that's good news for you, isn't it, Mary Beth? Oh, man. Talking about John Freiberger today of Freiberger & Associates, I'm Larry Mueller. Breanne Chasseau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your home and home improvement issues with John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector. He specializes in evaluating older structures, but as you've been hearing, he knows a whole lot about a whole lot of things, and it's always great to have him come by. So if you have a question, call at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Sharon in Oshkosh up next. Sharon, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm calling about my home, and it is a home that was built in the mid-70s, and we've had hot water heat. I remember when we first moved in, we used to bleed the registers regularly. As we got to be senior citizens, we didn't do that so regularly. I now have random, loud, rushing water. And I don't know, is it a simple matter of getting down on my hands and knees again and bleeding these registers? Should I professionally call in my heating guy and have him drain this or eliminate the air? I'm not sure at this stage of the game I can crawl to all those registers anymore.
Well, Sharon, I think you've diagnosed your problem. Basically, hot water heat should be more or less silent unless you're getting air into the system. Now, what concerns me a little bit here is that you're getting air into the system, and you really shouldn't. So I think I would go ahead and call a heating tech and ask him to go ahead and bleed things carefully, but also say to him, why are we getting the air in the system? Because it really seems that you should not.
Yeah.
When it's serviced at different times, you know, usually yearly I have it serviced.
Right.
Can air get into the system as it's being serviced or if things are being fixed on it?
It really shouldn't. There may be some sort of it. Now, you should have an expansion tank on that system. All hot water systems have expansion tanks. And I don't know what type of expansion tank you have, whether it's one of the old ones that was basically just a hollow steel barrel or a newer one that actually has a rubber diaphragm in it.
Well, I'm sure it's the original one from the 70s. So
it's possible that we've got some sort of issue with the water level. You probably have a 10 or a 12-pound autofill on that. That system should not take much water, but have the technician check any place where air could get into the system, because hot water systems really should be quite trouble free. I mean, that's why we like them so much.
And I love the even heat.
Right.
I'm being a little alarmed here when, in the middle of the night, you know, you begin to wonder, am I having a problem with the shower? Has something happened with the toilet? Is something going on that I'm not recognizing? And no, it's just that heating system again.
Right.
Yeah.
And if there's water in there and you're getting, I'm sorry, if there's air in there and you're getting a water blockage and then suddenly you get enough heat, enough expansion that air suddenly moves through, that is going to give you some noise. But if there's no cavitation, if there's no air bubbles, that really should be a silent system. So, service technician, I think, is where you need to start.
You know, I was talking to some people who live on the east side of Madison and have hot water heat, and they're building a house and moving to the country, and they're putting in hot water heat.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a hard time talking the builder into it, but it is so comfortable.
Oh, it is. And the hydronic systems where we have tile floors and we have the tubing in the floor.
Oh, boy.
The panelized systems,
wonderful.
It is really so nice.
Wonderful. Michael in Rock Spring, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for taking my call. And as usual, very informative program from you and John. What I have going on is a house that was built in 1990, and when I go up in the attic, when it's cold like this, and I go up there to check for mice that have been getting in, and that's a separate issue, but I notice there's frost on the plywood that the shingles are nailed to, and I'm guessing that's not a good sign.
You are guessing correctly. So we do have moisture there. If we get enough moisture, what happens is as that roof warms, and it might be a cold day outside, but you may have the sun on it enough to warm it. If that frost melts and then starts soaking into that plywood, eventually those glues in the plywood can give way. And our three- or five-layer plywood suddenly becomes, instead of one solid mass, becomes a group of loose layers. Then when you walk on the roof, it feels very spongy. And the nails won't hold. So you probably heard our discussion earlier with Joan. The first thing I think you need to do is to check your venting. On a house built in 1990, venting was required by the Uniform Dwelling Code in 1990, so you should have both upper and lower venting and insulation dams. So start by checking for those to make sure that you've got some air moving through the attic. The idea is if that warm, moist air comes out of the house, it's going to keep on going, and it's going to go right out through the roof vents. And as it goes out, it is going to suck in new, fresh, cold air through the soffit vent. So you're going to have sort of a natural convection system up there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how many soffit vents would be ideal?
Well, it's a little complicated because each type of soffit vent has a different rating. And it is what you have to look at is what is the net opening for the soffit venting? But basically what you want on an attic is for every 300 feet of space on the floor below, you really want to have a foot of net opening high and a foot of net opening low. So if you've got an 1,800 square foot house on two floors, 900 on the second floor, you want to have about 3 net square feet. Now, if you have the pot vents, most of the pot vents are about 0.8 feet. So 4 pot vents would work. When you get to the soffit vents, it depends upon the brand and the manufacturer. And by looking at it, you should be able to go online and get some information. Basically, in a house of your age, in 1990, I would expect to find continuous venting on the soffit. And there's no such thing as too much soffit venting. There is too much upper roof venting, but there's no such thing as too much soffit venting.
Okay. Well, and I do notice that when we have snow on the roof, that sometimes those ridge vents can be covered over with snow, and then the venting's not working properly, I'm guessing.
Well, and if they are covered with snow, if the snow is not melting, that may be that because no air is moving through those vents.
Okay.
Because if you have a good convection in the attic, those vents usually are self-clearing. I mean, you can get a roof with a real big drift on it, but usually that drift's only on one side. And, of course, the other thing is if you've got that ridge vent, Michael, make sure they cut the sheathing back so it's actually open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times the roofer has put the ridge vent on, but the carpenter forgot to cut open the sheathing and the roofer didn't do it because it wasn't his job.
Yeah. Well, and one last question. Now, those ridge vents, can mice get in those? I'm still trying to find where the mice are getting into the attic.
It's very unlikely. Most of the ridge vents, at least of the newer type, the fibrous type, like GAF Snow Guard, which is really one of the best out there, it'd be really hard for a mouse to nibble his way through all of the nylon mesh up there. If you're getting mice into the house, usually they're going to come in low around the ring joists. So I would go down in the basement. And, Michael, the one thing you could do here, let's apply a little science. It's going to cost you $400, but we could apply a little science. You could go to Focus on Energy and then get in touch with an energy analyst. And what he'll come and do is do a blower door test on your house. He'll depressurize it to 50 pascals. And if you find there's air coming in all around the ring joists, well, he's going to give you ideas of how to seal that, but that is most likely where the mice are coming in. Mice usually come in low, squirrels come in high.
Okay.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks, very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Michael.
Hey, Larry, we should probably just reiterate that for anybody who really has some doubts and can't self-analyze it, is focus on energy yeah. inspections, the thermal imaging, the blower door test, doing it this time of year. For $400, who knows, you might be able to save thousands of dollars in utility bills and in mousetraps the next several years by calling one of these people and having him come in and analyze your house.
And it's really an educational experience. You find out, you get an initial look, and then they come back after you've done your work, if you need to do some work, and check again to see if everything's copacetic.
That's right. It's fascinating just to look at the colored pictures of where the heat is leaving your house.
Absolutely.
It tells you so much.
You bet. Suzette in Milwaukee, thanks much for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Boy, am I glad you guys are doing this show. I have a very old building. It's actually a four-family, four one-bedroom rental unit building, and it's at least 100 years old. I actually don't remember when it was built, but sometime in the early 1900s. And it has one boiler and one thermostat for the whole building. And I actually have two issues with it, but I'll give you the most important first, and you can tell me if I can ask you the second one. So a number of years ago, and I don't remember how many, the city of Milwaukee mandated that I have someone come in, a contractor come in, and insulate the attic. So they rolled insulation into the attic floor, and they opened the windows on each end of the building and put vents in them. Since then, however, and I've also had in the last 2 years a new roof put on, which does have roof vents, but I don't know about soffit vents, actually. So since those things have been done, two of the upstairs units, which are right under the attic, I'm having paint peeling off the ceilings in the kind of the little hallway right outside the bathroom. Not in the bathrooms. Well, actually, no. One is starting in the bathroom. But it started outside the bathrooms. And I'm thinking this is not related. We've looked, and I don't think it's related to a roof leak. It seems like it's a moisture-trapping thing, but this is brand new. Is this possibly related to something insulation-wise?
Boy, that's a tough one.
I know. And my roofers swear there's nothing wrong with the roof.
Now, Suzette, do your bathrooms have bathroom exhaust fans that are vented
they
to the exterior?
They do not.
I think it'd probably be a very good idea to go ahead and have bath fans put in, at least on that second floor, where you can get at it easily. Remember, they need to be vented outside, not
up in the attic.
Right.
So
right out the wall. Yeah.
Depending upon the type of insulation they rolled out up there, if they rolled out an insulation that has a craft paper or a foil face on it, that could be trapping some moisture now on that foil face or that craft paper that could be migrating back and causing. If it is just what's called a friction-free or just nothing but fiberglass insulation, the moisture should move through that. So that would be the first thing to check, is just see what did they roll out there.
Okay.
Probably the best thing to do here. I see peeling paint all the time in bathrooms, and sometimes it's only 20 years old. And generally what happens, if you get a lot of moisture in bathrooms, that can cause the paint to peel, especially on a 100-year-old building where you may have this great old glossy lead oil paint underneath and then you're trying to put new stuff over it. So before things start peeling for whatever reason, let's go ahead and vent the bath fans and get the bathrooms dried down just a little bit and see if that helps. And then check up in the attic and see if they have used a material that has a vapor barrier. And the other thing then to do is, since you do have upper venting now, check to see if you have soffit venting.
Okay, and tell me again, how do I know that?
Well, if you look on the outside and look at the overhang, is there anything in there that looks like venting or screening or, you know,
holes?
Holes, yes.
Well, that's a little holes.
Sometimes in old houses, they cut in what look like heat registers. Take a look at that, and then up in the attic, if you don't have insulation dams, you probably don't, just look for daylight. Now, one thing that we find is some of these old buildings, 100-year-old buildings, had wood shingles to begin with.
Right, this one did, but it was a tear-off when it was re-roofed.
Okay. See, wood shingles are absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Every wood shingle is laid a quarter inch away from the wood shingle next to it. So a wood shingled roof is vented all over the place, and they function very, very well. Once you get rid of those wood shingles and you put on solid sheathing and solid asphalt shingles, you completely change the air changes in your attic. So what they did is they put in upper roof venting, which took care of the upper venting, but there probably is no soffit venting because if you had wood shingles, you didn't need it. So you probably are going to have to put soffit venting in and go up today or tomorrow while it's still nice and cold or this weekend and see if you have frost in that attic. Mm-hmm. If you do, that is going to be proof that you need soffit venting.
And if you're going to put when you put the fans in the bathroom, I would recommend to go ahead and put a timer in there, too, because it's really handy to be able to, you know, set it for 20 minutes or whatever, and then it shuts off on its own.
That's true.
Well, I've had the building for almost 20 years, and this has just happened in the last, year or so, that this suddenly there's this paint issue. I mean, it didn't happen before, and I'm assuming, bathroom usage is probably pretty standard amongst people. I mean, it's just weird, that suddenly, and it is since I had the roof done that I'm having these issues. Well, with this
right, because we've completely changed the air change characteristics. We've removed all the venting from your roof and only put half of it back in.
Okay. All right. Well, then my second thing is just that I have one unit on the lower. There are two down, two up. And whenever the furnace is running, in really cold weather, this one tenant, his apartment is freezing cold. And he tells me that the radiators all are working and they're hot and they have been bled. And I can't figure it out.
Well, this is where, as Larry and I were saying just a minute ago, thermal imaging is wonderful stuff. An energy analyst can come and he'll take pictures of the side of your house and he will be able to show you exactly where the heat is coming out through those walls. And then give you some ideas.
Well worth the money.
Give you some ideas of how to take care of it. Because you're probably, you've got an uncomfortable tenant. You have to keep 68 degrees for tenants in most cities in the state. You really don't want to have the city housing people coming in. So I really think that it'd be a real good investment to have somebody come in and do some thermal imaging on your building and give you an idea of what the problem is in that unit. Might save you a lot of money.
In the long run. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Suzette, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Call us back. Let us know how that all turns out. I'd love to hear. Love to hear. Dan and Mercer up next. Dan, hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, Larry.
Sure thing.
And to John, I've been listening to you for decades, it seems, back when you were with Ken Adams. I'm retired from the building mechanicals industry.
Oh.
And John, you are right in there with Joe Lestrebek, Fine Home Building. You're just an amazing individual.
Anyone who compares me to my friend Joe is paying high tribute indeed.
Well, you deserve it.
Thank you.
I have two questions and a couple of comments. One was a previous caller as far as snow covering a ridge vent. I live in Mercer, and we're in the Lake Superior snow belt. And previous to this year, I've had to shovel my roof every year because of the snow load, and I have found a cavity under the snow from the ridge vent doing its job. Mm-hmm. So I think snow covering it is not really an issue as far as whether it's working or not. The other one that I wanted to mention was the bathroom fans. I've used for a number of years Fantech, where the fan itself is in an attic area and not right there in the bathroom ceiling or not right in the kitchen by the range hood.
Right.
And they are so quiet. It's really a nice way to go if somebody's looking at doing that.
They really are. We've found them sometimes that they're so quiet we've had to put a lighted switch on the wall because people don't know when the fan is on.
Oh, my goodness.
They are wonderful. They're very efficient. The nice thing about them is you can move a couple hundred cubic feet per minute versus the sort of cheap things you get at the big boxes that are moving 60 or 75 feet per minute.
Right.
So they don't have to be on as long. That's a very good suggestion. Fantech, some wonderful products and good website at which people can look. The other thing that we should probably also mention is that when we put these fans in, we want to make sure we use insulated ducts.
Yep.
Because if we use like those metal cheap corrugated ducts, what is going to happen is we're going to get condensation inside there and running back. So thanks for bringing that up, Dan. It gives me a chance to add the insulation to the equation as well.
Okay. Yeah, great. My two questions for you, John, are roofs. Up until this year, as I said, I shoveled my roof every year. I have a factory-built house, 1,000 square feet, and the whole thing is cathedral ceilings. They were roof panels. It's a ranch style. And the previous pitch was 2.5x12 with 2x8 rafters. Needless to say, I decided this fall, I'm in my 60s, I can't shovel this anymore.
Right.
I don't need the ice dams. And I built a roof over the top of it with a 6x12 pitch. And I built my own proper vents or insulation dams out of 1-inch poly isol and continuous ridge vent. My question, John, is envision this house, this ranch, 1,000 square foot, with these roof panels, cathedral, all over. They were filled with about 3 inches of mineral wool, so there was a airspace for the previous venting.
Right.
I built this 6x12 roof over it and now have R70 insulation, blown-in cellulose. It's just wonderful. But I have that airspace in there. I went in through each old rafter cavity and forced in mineral wool, quite thick bats, like going in about 5 inches. Do you think that that airspace is going to cause me a problem? I do have vapor barrier and everything else.
If your vapor barrier is acting as an air barrier, if it's pretty tight, and a manufactured housing, was this a house that was delivered in two halves?
Yes.
Okay. The big question is, did they get a good seal at the ceiling when they put those two halves together? If you've checked that, and if it's pretty tight, if we have a good vapor and air barrier on the interior, you should be okay.
Okay.
All right.
The second question is wall construction. I built a dream shop for myself, and it's 2x6 studs. I paid to have... I built, when I say built it, I mean I built it, just like this roof, and 2x6 stud construction, but I did have a company come in and blow cellulose into the walls, which has been just great. I sided it myself with James Hardy cement board siding. Now on the inside, I'm putting 1-inch polyiso to keep any cold migration through the studs.
Right.
But I see this with new construction, relatively new, where they're sheathing the outside of the house in styrofoam, and I cannot envision trying to attach that cement board siding, lap siding, through foam. That just seems wrong to me.
Yeah. What do you think, John?
We are seeing so many problems with cement board siding because it's put on wrong. And I prefer to have foam on the interior of the occupied space. But if you put it on the exterior and use cement siding or you use wood siding, we want to have a rain screen system. So if we were putting it on the exterior, Dan, what we would have done is had our studs in our sheathing, then we would have had an exterior wind barrier. Then we would have had our foam, and then we would have put 3/8-inch rips of treated or marine grain plied wood so that we had an airspace, and then we would have put our cement board siding over that. What we're finding with cement board siding is once water gets in back of it, we're getting a lot of efflorescence and breakdown. So if it's against foam and the foam is trapping water back there, the siding has a tendency to develop a lot of problems.
There you go. Thank you so much, Dan, for calling. I appreciate your call. Our guest today, John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector and owner of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. Great to have him along, and thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Here's a look at what's coming up this afternoon here on the Ideas Network. At 12:30 on Chapter a Day, Michelle Good reads from The Age of Miracles by Karen Thompson Walker. Then join us from 1 till 3 for The Kathleen Dunn Show. After 1, Kathleen welcomes Milwaukee Police Chief Edward Flynn. After 2, The Class of 65, A Student, A Divided Town, and The Long Road to Forgiveness. Stay with us.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your radio station, the one that wakes you up in the morning, rides with you on your commute, and offers great companionship during the day. You rely on WPR, and WPR programs rely on your support. If you've never given before, make your first ever gift right now at WPR.org. Thank you.
Support for WPR comes from Hooper Corporation, supplying custom construction services, including electric power, mechanical, and green technology to commercial, industrial, and utility customers nationwide. Hooper Corporation, a Wisconsin company since 1913. Support also comes from Madison Sourdough Patisserie, a French-style bakery featuring Parisian macarons, house-made sorbet, and ice cream. The patisserie is located next to the bakery at 918 Williamson Street.
Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at your home and improvements with John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates. We've been zeroing in quite a bit on tightening up your home, making it more energy efficient. Questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page as well. You can post questions or comments right there. The Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And let's turn to Norm in Portage next. Norm, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I've got a ranch-styled house, and when the temperatures get, I'd say, around 10, 0 degrees, something like that, for a long time, I start smelling sewer smell in the house. And upon looking at where the cause is, I look at the roof and the vents that come from the sewer system, like from the bathroom, the laundry room, kitchen sink, they're all frosted up. And I was wondering if there's any way that I could keep those vents from frosting up in this real cold weather.
Norm, do you have an inch and a half, 2-inch, or the old 4-inch vents coming through the roof?
I believe, if I remember right, they're like, I think they're the 4-inch.
The 4-inch. The 4-inches rarely frost up. I know way back when they actually used to put 6-inch vents through the roof.
Wow.
Because they were worried about that. That's back in the 30s and 40s. There may be other issues. Now, I can tell you what I see sometimes as a home inspector is when we get nice, cold, dry air for a month in Wisconsin and you have a floor drain in the basement that nothing gets run into, the trap can dry out. And once the trap dries out, you can get sewer gas in through floor drains in the basement. Now, sometimes in the summer, we've got a dehumidifier or something running into them, so we're keeping that trap wet. So I would check the I would go ahead and check the traps. The other thing that we have occasionally found is we found failed glue joints in the attic. And we found PVC pipes were basically stacked together with no glue joint. But if the attic is well vented, that smell should not be coming down into the house. So it's a little bit of a mystery. I would say the first thing to do, Norm, is go ahead and check the sewer vents. But a 4-inch pipe should not frost over because the air that's coming out of there is relatively warm. Now, you are going to get frost around the edge because that air is also very moist. But to have a 4-inch actually freeze over is something that I've never seen.
Would a drain? Would you run some water down the drain or not? That basement?
Yes.
I've had water. Actually, the drain that I just put in there because I just redid the bathroom down in the basement. And it did not have a floor drain in there, and I do have one in there now, and there is water in it.
Mm-hmm.
What I used to do is just when this would happen is we had an old asphalt roof on the top, and I'd actually crawl up there with warm water and thaw these out, which would cure the problem. But since then, we've put on a steel roof, and I somewhat hesitate crawling up there on a steel roof and doing this now.
And, Darm, when you went up there, were they actually frozen shut or just frosted?
They were frosted shut. It's like snow would build up in there. But they were actually, it's not a real solid ice, but it was mm-hmm. more like frost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it probably still had some air movement. The other thing is one can simply call a plumber and see if we have some venting problems with some of the sinks. Do you get any gurgling sounds out of the sinks? I mean, when you flush the toilet, does the lav in the bathroom or the bathtub make noise?
No, that all works normal.
It is, okay.
Yeah.
And how old a house do you have, Norm?
It's a prefab home that was built in the 60s.
Okay, so it should be vented to reasonable plumbing standards. So mm-hmm. I'm sorry on that one. I don't think, other than checking your floor drains, I can give you too much advice.
Yeah. Okay. One trick I did hear from somebody else is to, when it's safe to go on the roof, is to paint the exterior tubes that are sticking out of the roof black, so that sometimes the sun heat can thaw them out or keep them thawed out. So I haven't tried that yet, but I was thinking of maybe trying that.
That would help, because if they're white PVC, they're yeah. going to have a Beddoe effect. They are going to reflect the sunlight. And a lot of roofers now, the GAF and some of the other shingle companies, actually make spray paint. So that if you put on GAF weathered wood shingles, you get GAF weathered wood spray paint, and you spray your roof fence. So some people don't like those white things sticking out of their darker colored roofs.
Yeah, makes good sense. Thanks a lot, Norm, for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in Madison, on to you next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Hi, John. I did a couple radon tests, and that's high. And so I have an appointment for someone to come in to do a system. I'm just wondering, how common is this in Madison? I'm on the southwest side. And what should I be asking the person who comes to look to put the system in?
Radon is very common in Madison, and it's very common in Sun Prairie. It's common in areas with a lot of sand, a lot of gravelly soil, with stone outcrops. So we do see a lot of radon. And what measurement did they give you when you had it tested, Bob?
It was a little above 10.
A little above 10. Okay, and that's pretty high. What's interesting about the United States is we have a different standard than Europe. Europe's standard is almost a third lower than we have, and considering that the EPA now says, and there is a good EPA website, by the way, on radon. You just Google EPA radon, you'll get a lot of information. But I believe that radon is now the second largest cause of lung cancer in the United States.
Yeah.
So it certainly is good to get remediation done. Now, getting remediation done is the question always comes up, well, what is remediation? You really need to after test to see whether what was done actually has lowered your radon. And I really like to see radon at 2.4 or lower. So 2.4 picocuries per cubic deciliter is what I like to see, basically relying upon the European standard. Now, some of it depends upon how much time you spend in the basement. If you have a basement family room and the children are on the floor down there and you've got 10 picocuries there, that's pretty hazardous. I mean, if it's a basement where you don't even have a laundry and you never go down, it's different. So it's something I think you're on the right track. You definitely want to have that remediated. There are several good firms in Madison, but then you want to do an after test. Now, one of the problems with testing is that most of the tests that people use are 24 to 48 hour. They always worry me a little bit, because the paradox of sampling is we don't know whether the sample is representative of the total population. And what I would suggest you do is ask them to agree to remediate to the point where you can use a 6-month alpha tracker test kit, which should be midwinter to midsummer or midsummer to midwinter, so you get all the different climates and air conditioning and heating and such, and see if they will guarantee that that will be at a reasonable range. And they may say, hey, it's 3.5 or 3.7. We won't go to 2.4. But I worry of that our testing is not terribly accurate. And considering that a 6-month test is only going to cost you about $75, I think it's probably worth doing so that you're really educated as to the radon level in your house.
Okay. I've done five of the carbon tests, and they all came out about the same. So.
They did.
Yeah. There we go.
In different spots.
Yeah. Yes, that time of year makes a big difference.
That's what I understand.
Right.
Like winter would be higher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Pete in La Crosse up next. Pete, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi, Larry and John. Your frost test, as far as frost inside of an attic in the winter, that wouldn't be that unusual if there was frost on the outside of the roof at the same time. But if we go out on a dry morning when there's no frost outside but there's frost inside the roof, well that would certainly be diagnostic. But in regards to Joan's problem with condensation inside the attic, another thing to check is quite often bathroom and kitchen vent fans are installed with plastic piping, or should I say plastic dryer hose, which eventually just falls apart with age, but you can't really see it because it's hidden underneath the blown cellulose or fiberglass insulation. So check for that. And then I've also seen where people have done this with the tubes, and they've never really gotten them out as far as the soffit panels, or they've gotten them to the soffit panels, but the whole side of the house is vented soffit. So what happens is the moist air comes out, rises, and goes right back into the attic. So they need to be aware that the soffit, at least, and you'd be the one to answer this, but I think it's like 6 feet either side of a vent, has to be solid panel to prevent that moisture from coming back up into the roof. So I'm going to point those things out.
Right, mm-hmm. Thank you. And I really agree with you. The venting down through a soffit is just a dumb idea. The problem with the soffit panels is they're usually set in place metal panels, so even if 6 feet of it is solid, that moisture comes right back into the attic. We had an email earlier also, a woman saying that her kitchen vent was just vented into the attic. And, of course, that's a really bad idea as well. If you're making spaghetti that night, you're putting an awful lot of moisture up into the attic. And, yeah, so we, I think Larry and I had mentioned to an earlier caller, we really want to make sure that those attic vents not only are solid, as you say, but also insulated, so we don't get that condensation running back or the condensation forming in the pipe and actually dribbling down into the attic where it can cause problems. So anything mechanically vented into the attic, we have to watch. And we had the question about the sewer gas as well. And as I mentioned earlier, we have had attics where, due to defects in the venting, we were getting sewer gas in the attic. And it's very easy to find that because you look where the sewer pipe comes up, the vent pipe. If there's a lot of frost around it, then that pipe is leaking somewhere along. The other thing that's probably worth mentioning is chimneys, and we'll get to that after the news, I think.
We'll take a quick break. John Freiberger, our guest today, and he'll be with us till 12:30. We'll look at the news right now, and then we will be back with John. You stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at home improvements, maybe tightening up your home, maybe doing some other improvements. John Freiberger, our guest of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector. He does a lot of work, especially with older structures, very old structures. He knows a lot about those structures and probably yours as well. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. It's an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got a photo that might help with the discussion of your home, post it up on our Facebook page and let us know and we'll take a look. And John, we were talking about air leaks around chimneys, especially with older homes.
That's right, Larry. The old houses, when we used to have these coal furnaces and old oil burners that went really hot, a lot of times they framed these houses and they left 1 to 2 inches between the brick and the framing. And it goes from the basement to the attic. So if you have one of these old houses, take a flashlight and look next to your chimney. If that is going all the way up to the attic, you have a tremendous amount of heat loss and also moisture coming out of your basement going up to the attic. And the best place to block that would be up at the attic. And putting insulation batting over it doesn't block it. You really need some sort of solid blocking. One of the easiest ways of doing that, if you're still using the chimney, are what's called fire pillows. And you can buy them at most fire prevention supply stores. And they're basically a pillow. You jam it in there. They become airtight, and they can't burn. And they also are a fire stop. Because if you get a fire in your basement, we've seen many houses where a fire starts in the basement, and then the roof burns off.
Oh,
and the first
sure.
and second floor don't get hit. But that chimney space, the space around the chimney, acts as a chimney and carries that heat and fire right into the attic. So there's a couple of different reasons for taking your old house and sealing around that chimney.
Rachel in Whitefish Bay called but couldn't stay with us. She has a home built in the 30s. It gets very drafty. Her heating bill is upwards of $800 per month. Oh, my goodness. Ben suggested that they insulate the attic, but it only covers a small portion. What do you think?
Well, if her house is drafty, Rachel probably has an older house and has no wind barrier on it. And we've already mentioned a couple times in the program that the place to start is with some science, and we get the science through thermal imaging and a blower door test. So Rachel really needs to contact an energy inspector by going to Focus on Energy and seeing who is accredited and listed there, and get an idea of what's happening with her house. Once she has an idea, there's a lot of ways that we can tighten up these old houses. Like, I can take a 1920s house and I can make it tighter than a brand new house with the modern technology that we have. But the first thing Rachel has to do is find out exactly what the problems are.
Get that energy audit for
that
sure.
That is correct.
Dave in La Crosse, your turn. Thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi, thank you. I have a 115-year-old house that's it's near a railroad yard, so it gets shaken a lot by trains. And there's an interior wall, load-bearing wall. It's got a big crack that I just recently discovered going up the stairway. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if it's possible to get somebody with, like, a fiber optic scope or something to look inside that wall and see how much damage there is.
I don't think it's going to tell you anything. If the wall is moving... The wall is moving because whatever is holding up that wall down in the basement is perhaps inadequate. So what you really need to do is you need to look in the basement at the underside of that wall and to see what's going on.
Yeah.
If you've got some fasteners coming loose or there's some problems with a column that goes through the basement floor and it's decaying on the bottom where you don't see it and it's getting shorter, those are the sorts of things that cause these cracks to develop in these old houses. Mm-hmm.
The problem is I can't really see the bottom of the wall from the basement either because there's some other obstructions, plates and so on. And I just wondered if it's, you know, any way possible to sneak something up there and take a look at the bottom of that wall.
I'm going to suggest that you call a local home inspector there in La Crosse. Look for somebody who's a member of the National Association of Home Inspectors, which you can pick up online, or the American Society of Home Inspectors. Ask them to come over. They're just going to charge you, $150 or $200 to come over and start advising you on it. And maybe you're going to have to do a little bit of deconstruction, because if a fix needs to be done, you're going to have to take the finishes off anyway.
Yeah.
So home inspectors can be real. I mean, they're generalists. So you want to talk to them and say, do you know about old structures? And you'll find several out there in the La Crosse area that are pretty well educated and can probably give you some good help.
Yep, there we go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Dennis in Madison, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, fellas. Nice show today.
Thank you.
I'm calling on behalf of my 1976 three-bedroom ranch. About five or six years ago, when the energy credit was still available, we replaced all the windows in our house with wood interior, aluminum clad exterior. Really nice Marvin windows. We've noticed now, though, that they're really sweating really, really bad, to the point where there's, if we're not on top of it, there's mold forming on top of the windows. So I'd like to install a heat recovery ventilator in the house, but I'm not sure how big. I've looked at a few online, and I'm seeing some between the 45 to 100 CFM range for around $600. I'm just wondering if you guys have any advice for me on a brand, a size for a three-bedroom ranch. It's roughly 1,800 square feet or so. We'd just like to be able to take care of that sweating issue, which I've read quite a few forums are like, as soon as you turn these things on, your sweating issue becomes non-existent. So I'm just curious what I can do to maybe prevent that, if I should go with a heat recovery ventilator or more of an ERV system. What are your thoughts on that?
I think an HRV is going to meet your needs, because what you're going to be doing is you're going to be introducing dry outside air that has been pre-warmed by your exhaust. Certainly there are many good brands out there, including I believe that we have one still made here in Madison. Mm. And I think what I would have you do is you're going to probably want to get a energy technician, energy company to put this in, have them run the calculations for you. If you probably want to get some basic measurements on how humid your house is, because you can size by square footage, but a lot of things depend upon lifestyle.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got four children, two large dogs, a big goldfish tank, and you make spaghetti from scratch all the time, your 1,800 square feet is going to have a lot more moisture load than is 1,800 square feet with
house.
With just two people living in it without pets, without a lot of plants. So maybe start by just get a humidistat and sort of see what variations you get in the humidity inside your house, so we have an idea of how much moisture needs to be removed, and that will inform your HVAC contractor a bit more than simply going by the square footage. Again, we're trying to put a little bit of science in there by getting some measurements to start with.
Well, I was hoping to be able to do this without the needs of, I mean, I've got a pretty extensive, I'm a DIYer, so I've got extensive tool kits and whatnot. So I would like to do this myself. Can you tell me about plumbing that? I take it there's just going to need to be probably 2 4-inch holes, one for exhaust and one for an intake. Is that all is usually required for those? And where would I place that? Would it be in like a basement? Is that the best part? Or would it be in like my upper joists, for like in the attic? What would be the best area to install something like that?
Well, you're put in as close proximity to the furnace as you can. But what you're going to need to pick out a brand, and then you're going to have to take a look. Now, the intake vent, there are lots of regulations on where that can be. You can't be near a gas meter. You can't be within a certain number of feet of a furnace exhaust. I think it's 4 feet. And some of the things are recommendations rather than actual code. So let's say you're going to use a Life Breath. You would want to go to their website, download their installation instructions, and then look at those very carefully. The brands are generally, they're similar, but not everything is exactly the same. And you want something that is really going to work in a cold climate, which is why something made in Wisconsin makes a certain amount of sense versus something that's maybe manufactured in Japan, where we just don't see 25 below zero in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Right, who's that that's made it? Can you tell me who it is?
I believe that the brand is still called Life Breath, and
because currently I'm looking at the Brone systems, and those have been, people like them. So.
Brone has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But it still would probably be a good idea to get that moisture checked.
I would still check that moisture, because you don't want to just go by square footage and then find that your windows are still sweating and that you don't have enough CFM of air change.
Yeah, right. Okay.
All right.
Okay, guys, great. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate the call. Steve in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
First, let me give a testimonial for John's company. I guess it's almost been 10 years that he did some work for us on ice damming, and once the contractor saw the report and all the pictures, there was just no question about what had to be done, and they fixed everything without any expense on our end. So.
Oh, wonderful.
This was a condo on Midvale Boulevard, John. You may remember.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, I'm still there. 10 years. We had all, in the townhome, there, you know, we had all these heating and air conditioning problems too within the units. But I read about a product called AeroSeal a while ago, and they supposedly claim they can seal your ductwork from the inside. And I still think I have a lot of leaks in my ductwork that's causing part of my problems. I wonder if you've heard of that product.
Yes, I have. There are a couple different companies out there, and basically I think it's pretty much a latex polymer, and they pull a spray system through the ducts and spray it from the interior. I have not used any of them, but I would probably just do a little bit of research online and see if I don't know if anyone in Madison.
Now, there's no one in Madison. I've been looking at this about a year. They finally have a dealer in Evansville. There are a lot of people in Minnesota are dealers, and also in Illinois, but this is the first one is air conditioning, a company in Evansville.
In Evansville. Well, at least they're close. And, Steve, if this works, would you please let me know?
Yeah, well, yeah. Right. That's what the guys at MG&E said, too. Let us know what happens.
Well, one of the problems we have is so many people have retrofits in their house, and they've put air ducts into attics. and they leak just tremendously. So people will insulate over them, but the air is still going through the insulation. So if we can get something like this that really does work, and you are a great test case because you're the problems at your development were just astronomical. So you are an excellent test a test market, and I would love to hear if this does really work.
Me too. But, yeah, I don't have any I'm in a townhome, so I don't have any ductwork in the attic. It's all within the walls and in the floors. But there are units that, well, as you know, the building they do have the insulated ductwork in the attic. But this would be just for my own townhome that I'd be considering this. But, okay, well, I'm thinking about it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Steve. And, again, let us know. Dennis in Menominee, hi.
Good afternoon. When I got home, I heard you talking about the Fantech, and we have had a Fantech in our house, well, also in the previous house, but in our Menominee home now for 15 years. And it's great. A couple things. One, because of the fan being in the attic, and, of course, it can serve more than just one bathroom, I have placed the exhaust over the bathtub shower area because, of course, there is no electrical in the ceiling. And I have to assume that that is, of course, no problem because the actual fan itself is 3 feet away from the exhaust.
Yeah. Right. That is correct. And the other nice thing about it is you don't have this bulge, this mechanism coming out of the ceiling. All you have is a grill that is flat and flush with the ceiling. So if you don't have a lot of head clearance, it works really well.
Yeah. Now, the other problem, though, I think, and this is with any exhaust fan, especially in winter when it, of course, is exhausting moisture, the exit on the roof, it happens to be on our roof, can freeze on the flapper on the roof. I'm just wondering, is there some magic solution or a better roof vent that, in fact, won't seal? Now, the motor on the Fantech is strong enough that it eventually just, in a fairly short time, opens it. But just wondering if there's some solution that it wouldn't, that there could be a way that it wouldn't freeze tight.
Right. What I have done with Fantechs, because the fan does not allow backdrafting very easily, is I've actually specified roof hoods that have no flapper in them. They just have the animal screening.
Oh.
Because remember, if we've got our fan up in the attic, we don't have a lot of air falling back down through that vent actually into the bathroom, onto the bathroom ceiling where we usually have our bathroom fans. So it doesn't become as important to have that flapper when we're using an inline Fantech or remote product.
I see. So you feel that the fan itself is blocking the down.
That's right. And also just where it is located is going to help you a lot because it's up in the attic. It's not down in the ceiling.
Your
fan is located above your thermal barrier. So you don't care whether some air gets into the pipe above the fan because that's in the non-conditioned space in any case. So these remote fans solve so many problems for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Dennis. Mark in Wauwatosa. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Hi. Yes, so I have a 1939 house with a Dutch colonial roof. And I have quite a big problem because back in December, I had it re-roofed. And the contractor, he let the tarps fly, and the house got rained in and created quite a lot of damage. He only had half of the roof re-roofed, and the other half was wide open with no tar paper. And he actually let the tarps fly multiple nights. We had very challenging high winds, and rain got it on the final night. It got nailed, and his insurance won't pay. They say, "Oh well, the contract I signed, is labor only, where I provided the materials, and they would not be liable beyond the amount of the contract, which was nothing compared to the damage that's been caused to the house. the whole south wall of the house, the upper story at least, is the insulation in it is full of water. I haven't taken that plaster off yet. It's a plaster and lath. It's a plaster over drywall house with really spectacular plaster crown molding in the dining room and the living room. And I really am not anxious to take off the crown molding. I'm thinking maybe take off the plaster on the slope ceiling up above the crown molding and take the plaster off below the crown molding, and hopefully the plaster crown ornamental detail will stay attached.
Those plaster moldings can be reproduced. Unfortunately, there aren't as many elderly Italian plasters as there used to be, but if you saw the restoration of the plaster moldings in the state capitol, they're absolutely spectacular. And there, so there are people out there. What they would do is, before you did demo, they would actually come and they would cut a template so they could exactly reproduce what you have there now. And that may be easier than all of the work of trying to cut around. So talk to, fortunately, you're in a good area for traditional plasterers. And I would check with some traditional plasterers and have them make a template. Now, the other thing, do you have an attorney?
No. You have to get an attorney.
Any
luck finding an attorney. One said, "Oh, it's going to cost you $5,000 to sue, whether you win or lose." And you know, I don't have much of a budget here for it. You know, I was counting on everything to go off without a hitch. And
yeah. I'd look around for an attorney.
Yeah, you really do need an attorney. Why don't you send me an email at frei@chorus.net. Our firm does a certain amount of expert witness work in litigation, and so I know attorneys both in the Madison and the Milwaukee area. But what you're telling me sounds like somebody is giving you a bit of a runaround, so let's get a professional involved, at least to take a look at it and tell you whether you have a case or not.
Thank you. That's really what I need, and I really appreciate that. I'll be in touch with you.
Larry, we have to remember that to be a contractor in Wisconsin, you have to be insured. Two cards in Wisconsin. One is that you're keeping up your education credits, and the other is your card that says your financial responsibility insurance card. So contractors in Wisconsin, as long as we use a contractor, not some guys working out of a pickup truck, is we do have a certain amount of protection, but that protection is there to protect people like Mark.
Yeah.
So we have to really start asking some hard questions when that protection doesn't seem to be there.
And again, it's another one of those things that could bear reporting to the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection as well.
That is a very good point.
There's also
right to cure legislation in the there's right to cure regulations in the state of Wisconsin, and that is something that Mark can look up online, or again, I can provide to him when he emails.
Thank you so much. Yep. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate your call very much. Robin says that her 90-year-old house has cracks that appeared on her stairs in the past 2 years. Is her house settling, or does the foundation need to be repaired? Lives in an old landfill, or on an old landfill, and gets water in her basement through the walls of the basement during hard rains and during spring thaws.
I'm going to repeat the suggestion, Larry, that Robin take a look at the National Association of Home Inspectors or the American Society of Home Inspector rosters online, and then call some of those home inspectors. The ones who join these national associations generally operate to a higher standard than those who are not members. And start in with a home inspector who knows something about old homes and have them come over and take a look, and they may be able to tell her quite a bit.
John, here we are out of time. It's always such a pleasure, and I know you're usually following up with some people as well. I really appreciate
and I really enjoy the follow-ups as well. Bernard and the other people that have emailed me in the last 2 months since I've been on, I learn more. They send me photographs, and I come on a little bit smarter every time I see you.
He's a smart guy. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg, our guest. And he'll be back in a couple of months, and we will do this all over again with him. It's really a pleasure to have him with us. Tomorrow at this time, it's Garden Talk, and we're going to be previewing Wisconsin Public Television's Garden Expo, and I'll be there 9:30, I'm talking, on Saturday morning with a couple of other people, so I'm looking forward to that. Hope you come on over and say hi. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.